Welcome to the 34th episode of Mintaka Talks. Today we're speaking with Kelly Chia, the Deputy Head of Research in Asia at Julius Baer. Kelly.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem, Kelly. It's been great to have you here. I'll just give a little intro. You know, you've been obviously with the bank for 11 years, initially trained as an aerospace engineer. You took the leap into equities. The equity role as a sell-side analyst at OCBC, subsequently Standard Chartered Bank, and then moved to the buy side with Temasek. Exciting background. Very glad to have you here today.
Happy to be here.
So listen, it would be great to hear a little bit about your journey, as particularly, you know, you've come from the aerospace engineering. Now you're researching crypto markets. You know, what's the common denominator here? Of course, you know, to the moon is the expression we all hear, but love to hear more about it.
The other common denominator will be high stress. Aerospace.
Good start.
Yeah, super high stress.
Hopefully nobody's dying if you get it wrong, basically, right?
Yeah, most definitely. And nobody died on my watch as an aerospace engineer too, thankfully. But the one thing in which I entered the this whole crypto thingy on my own in December 2020. So that will put me like, you know, crypto teenager maybe, not really an adult yet, crypto teenager. And I came in primarily because I wanted to know whether this thing that everybody was talking about was either going to, was a whole boatload of rubbish, you know, I need to do it myself, or it's we're seriously going to change our lives forever, you know, moving forward from here. So in December 2020, believe it or not, there was still Binance.sg. They closed that down because of regulatory issues. I onboarded, I bought BNB. I didn't buy enough ETH, unfortunately. I bought BNB because I was really stingy because of gas prices. And on the same day that I bought BNB, I went straight into DeFi, right? I went straight into Pancake. So it was so crazy. I didn't know what happened, but I sort of like just read Reddit and I tried it. So that's how I entered this space.
So straight down the rabbit hole. Okay.
Yeah, so crazy.
So, I mean, you obviously put up quite a bit of research, and you recently wrote that when it comes to crypto, there are long or short-term, you know, institutional opportunities for every season, be it crypto winter or summer, or in between. And obviously, all of those categories we've seen recently. Do you care to expand on that?
Yeah, I mean, Business Times sort of asked for an article on crypto. So I was just thinking about it. And in honesty, I got the inspiration when I was thinking about my holiday. I haven't gone out of the country for some time at that point of time, right? So I was just, it's really great that, you know, I can go into a winter, sort of like winter country, right? At the end of the year, I'm going off next week, actually. And then it hit me, right? Wow, we are sort of like, at the point of time when I was writing it, we were already in a crypto winter. Terra has collapsed. Yep. Three Arrows, you know, Celsius, and a whole bunch of them all basically blew up. But I think that this whole winter that we are currently in is more of a pricing thing, you know, where everybody, there is definitely a winter in price, because the pricing today, interestingly, is basically the same price that I entered the whole crypto world in December 2020. It's quite interesting. But I think that that's the pricing part of it. But, you know, if you go the underlying, you know, if I ask you, right, Seamus, hey, what's going on with Mintaka? It's just, oh man, so busy. Got so much stuff to do, right? And I think that the rails and the infrastructure that's all being built out isn't in the winter at all. If you came to Token 2049, sure, that's before FTX, but that's already after the collapse of 3AC and Terra. I mean, it was super crazy, you know, everybody was just doing so much, you know, and developing. And you know, I say this as a, I'm maybe biased because I'm an engineer by training, but I think engineers are not as flaky as, in general, right? As other professions. So I think you get a lot of smart people, right? Seamus and Mintaka, all your engineers, I'm pretty think they're pretty brilliant. And you know, if they see nothing there, I don't think, you know, you don't see thousands of them all entering this particular industry. So I think the winter part definitely is pricing, but the rest of it doesn't seem like it. The other three seasons, though, you want me to talk about the other three seasons?
Please, please do, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, jut in if you think that, you know, I'm spewing rubbish. At the point of time, I thought that something that was in autumn going to tip into winter was this whole play to earn rubbish, you know, where you basically needed new users to come in to bump up prices within the same ecosystem to for the ecosystem survive. If not, you know, it sort of like doesn't work. And you know, it's true today, right? And everything at the point of time is I thought that not only the prices of these kind of tokens going to go down, development and interest in it is just going to basically wane to nothing. And I think we see it today. The other thing which I had second thoughts about were DAOs, right? Decentralized autonomous. So this, you know, is still up for grabs. But I think that, you know, for anything, most things to come to a place of intense influence, especially an organization or movement, you really need a leader, you know, as in like a person that makes hard calls. I mean, if you go to war, or you know, if you've got a if your company is struggling to survive, I'm pretty sure you need someone to make hard calls, right? I mean, you don't want to leave it to everybody to supposedly think what's going on. Like, are we going to cut 500 people? Are we going to cut five people? Are we going to hire another 500 even though we are sinking? You need someone to do that.
I mean, you see that a consensus-driven early startup is definitely hard to manage. Typically, you need somebody to drive it forward, right? With
Yeah,
everybody.
so I had my some doubts about DAOs and you know, yeah, I mean that's up for grabs still. Maybe something can work out. Summers, I think there's something look good to look forward to. Interestingly, all the funds that have been raised for digital assets were raised generally around the time of, you know, May, June. You know, that's when Terra collapsed. And A16 raised 4 billion after Terra collapsed, 1 month, I remember. So
Incredible.
quite amazing. And I'm sort of like glad that all that money, right, and was raised then, and all the collapses is happening now, because it washes out all like the bad stuff, right? And hopefully, a majority of whatever funds that have been raised by whoever gets deployed into things that hopefully are better governed. Last part. Oh, spring. Yeah, spring. I think. I think that. You know, the whole DLT part, you know, where is the utility of the technology? I think that's something which is it gives me a lot of hope, you know. Yeah, it really gives me a lot of hope. Because even though lots of what we are doing now, you know, it's like a solution finding a problem. But I think that when this DLT technology, the more we are into it, I think that there is definitely intense opportunities to solve for the creator community, you know, even like remittances, right? The people who really need efficiencies and for the middlemen to basically go away. Yeah, I think these kind of applications are really helpful.
Well, I mean, you touched on a lot of topics we should expand on, but I think I'll step back a second. So you're giving kind of your personal opinion, but what exactly, it'd be great to go into how you look at this from a Julius Baer perspective. What's your role at Julius Baer, and what are you doing in this related to the crypto space?
Well, I have my regular job as the deputy head of research. I do macro research, you know, stocks, bonds, look at macro. In my not much spare time, but it still takes up a massive amount of time, is obviously crypto. And you know, we do have opinion on Bitcoin, Ethereum. And I think that, you know, as a regulated entity that publishes regulated research on Bitcoin and Ethereum, I think that's quite a feat, you know. We jump through hoops of fire to be able to achieve that. So that's something that we do as a as an organization also.
Interesting. And you know, how do when obviously one of the we'll get into the details, but obviously trust has been a theme that's come out this past week when we've seen some firms fall from grace. You know, and obviously a firm like Julius Baer is a trusted institution, it's regulated, it's trusted, it's been around for a long time. How is Julius
130, yes.
perfect? I mean, how is Julius Baer overall looking at this opportunity, and what's the journey been so far?
You know, we looked at it for a long period of time, and we took a break. And then in the last 9 months odd, the project team worked super duper hard. order to basically not 9 months. Well, it's almost slightly more than a year already, right? We started maybe third quarter of last year, and then there was a lot of evaluation. We think that definitely we are early in the game. We yeah. So and we just had Julius Baer has a midterm strategy that's typically iterated to the market every 3 years. And our group CEO has said that digital assets will be a key part of that. So, we think that at this point in time, we have a minority investment in SIBA Bank. That's a sort of like a sort of like in a parallel way to play this whole thing. But we are hoping that to come near to as near to the chain as possible. What that means is that we hope to eventually our vision would be to trade for our clients to be able to safely custodize their assets and obviously to be able to stake and possibly have some form of yield for the assets.
Man, that's definitely an exciting strategy. And I think we're seeing more and more banks go that way. I mean, your partnership with Sabo is obviously quite early compared to many banks, but I think that ambition is increasingly becoming more mainstream across firms. So going back to some of what you said, I mean, you touched a bit on kind of the utility speculation aspect of things. I mean, longer term, I mean, clearly right now we hear the criticism all the time that there's no use for blockchain. It's just really, or crypto rather, it's just a highly speculative asset, and that's what it's all about. And we've had these big spikes and big drafts lower, and maybe give some confidence to that view. But there's obviously a utility you talked about, and there's this conundrum of balancing the speculative element, which are kind of the incentive mechanisms as well, with delivering utility. How does that get balanced longer term? Is that something that's going to be resolved? Because something like housing, everybody wants affordable housing. But everybody also wants housing to go up in value because they're all long. So how do we resolve this? Or is there a way to resolve this?
Well, I'll answer the housing part first. If you want to long housing and yet be affordable, you just need to buy a house that's slightly further out, and hopefully you're in a pretty good spot where the city's expanding. But anyway, that's my thought on housing. But yeah, no, I think that for crypto, there is the use of crypto and then there is the want of crypto, right? I think the use of the want, let's talk about the want of crypto, which is, I think, a lot of it is happening today. They essentially people want their token to go up 100x. They want to say that I bought Solana at $1 and sold it at $243. That's the want that I think that's happening now. And there's also a want maybe in social flex. We have if you buy an ape, right, or you buy a punk and you put it in your Twitter profile, you might have to pay $8. Not sure yet.
A little cheaper now.
It's just like you suddenly become, I don't know, more credible because you own one. I'm not sure, but that's just the want of it. The use of it, we talked a little bit about it just now. There's possibly atomic settlement. Today's stocks is T plus two or T plus three or T whatever. I'm hoping that DLT will make it T plus zero. Instant, right? We talked about remittances where it helps cut off this huge middle layer. If you've got people that's remitting countries back to their funds back home. I mean, the middle guys take so much from them, right? And these are the people who specifically need to have efficient ways to deliver money to their family, right? And then, yeah, so I think that this whole thing about wants versus users is just whole. We need to differentiate it. Currently, I think it's a lot of wants, and for blockchain. It seems like it's a bit early, right, in terms of the use of it. It's like trying to anticipate like after the dot-com bursts in 2000, right, and then you're trying to anticipate, okay, this company is going to survive. So like nobody really knows. I really hope it doesn't, this is not like it mimics dot-com though, because from the peak of the dot-com burst to where it really recovered, I think it took 15 years. I hope it doesn't take 15 years for digital assets. I think technology cycles definitely has compressed quite a lot.
I think to your point, basically, though, that there was a bubble in the technology space, but out of that bubble, there may have been some wasted expenditure, but we built the kind of rails for what we have the internet economy now, basically. So I think
Yeah,
that,
true.
to your point, I think we're moving at a much more exponential pace where, we will recover, these cycles will be shorter, and maybe there'll be other bubbles. But fundamentally, the new way to exchange value, this trustless, that's instant, can have profound impact on financial markets. We're seeing that already, talking about banks, about how they can exchange value. We have a market that works on a daily settlement basis
Yeah.
or multiple day settlement basis. If you move to instantaneous, it completely changes business models. So
Definitely.
now, you mentioned, I've been in the market since 91, and it seems in the last week we've seen events that have wrapped up, Enron, Madoff, Lehman, and MF Global all in one. We've had FTX, and I'll go a bit further back, we've had 3AC, Celsius, hurting the market and hurting sentiment in the market. How can these bad corporate and finance practices still happen? And what's your view, and how is this, or are we going to get through this soon, or is this basically a long-term damage to the market?
It's anybody's guess, but one thing's for sure, all your, Bitcoin libertarians, right, where they want to do, everything in the whole world should be decentralized. We should be able to do anything we want with our money. Nobody should be prying. I think that, I know I work in a bank, so, I may be biased in saying this, but it really appears that we as humans can't really self-regulate, we can't really self-regulate. And there's this thought that, and so our view is always that, regulation is inevitable. It is not optional. It is not. I mean, it has been unfortunately shown time and again, after Terra, 3AC, and then you go to the point where we have
Have
FTX last
FTX
week.
last week.
Yeah, so
Yeah,
I think
so I think
regulation is
regulation.
inevitable because, and you ask about how is this going to happen? How did this happen? I mean, come on. There are frauds even in SEC listed companies, right? Audit every single year, maybe even by a Big Four auditing firm. Yet, if there's collusion, in FTX, there was all sorts of things like backdoor kind of algorithms and stuff like that that he programmed in. I think that, I mean, when there's collusion involved, I think it's basically impossible to fix. But hopefully, the chances or probably number of times it happens from now onwards, hopefully, it will be slightly less. Yeah.
Well, I mean, one of the things we're seeing basically is that, or one of our, as a company, our view has been basically that, as more assets move on chain, effectively, are individuals, and you think you touched on this earlier, basically, are individuals going to manage everything themselves, or are they going to rely on a trusted counterpart? And I think maybe this really focuses the market again on trust, and as assets grow into this space. Firms like Julius Baer are extremely well placed to benefit from that trust.
Yeah, I think I have to say one thing though. This whole FTX thing, I mean, I was caught in FTX, unfortunately. But I have to say, it's such an awesome platform. It's so great when it was working well, and in 1 week's time, 2 weeks' time, it basically went to zero. Yeah, I think that this whole aspect of opportunity and trust is important. The truth is, the truth is, it's funny thing that I'm using the word truth, because I think at the end of the day, truth is still greater than trust. Because not many people still trust banks, Just I think we all know that, right? But the point is, there's some form of way in which you'll be able to go through the legal system to arrive at some form of middle ground for regulated entities. Yeah. So I think that's just some of my thoughts with regards to that. Opportunities, definitely a lot of opportunities, yeah.
Well, speaking of truth, I mean, the whole point of putting things on ledger is the transparency delivers, right? You don't need to trust if you can verify. You can have things like proof of reserves and see actually, as the benefit FTX had, it was such a great platform, nobody bothered to look, basically, right? Once they started looking, questions came up, basically, right? And that's when things came up.
The funny thing is, according to Crunchbase, there were 44 investors into FTX. And then you look at them, it's like, wow, such pretty blue chip guys. I'm like, what happened to institutional due diligence, right? So I don't know. Like I said, you know, sometimes you've got, I'm pretty sure they all did their due diligence, but the problem is that if there is collusion, it's basically there's the human condition, you know, quite a part of our fallen human nature.
Julius Baer obviously covers a lot of high net worth individuals, the institutional investors. I mean, how's their attitude towards the market? And what are they when Julius Baer talks about crypto, what sort of services are they looking for, or digital assets, say more broadly, not just crypto, but what sort of services are they looking to for you from you?
Okay, so we've been on a journey where we speak with clients specifically on crypto and asking, trying to, you know, draw from them, right? What they really want, what they're adverse to, and what, you know, something which appeals to them. And in general, I think that through quite a number of crypto-specific discussions, there's one thing that stands out. You know, I'll paraphrase, right, what they say. And they say that, you know, if I've got 300K in my MetaMask, I think it's okay. Yeah, so these are rich guys, so 300K in their MetaMask is fine. But if I've got 3 million or 30 million, I think I would like to move it to a safer platform like you, right? So I think at the end of the day, you know, there is still an aspect where they want a rail of safety, especially for, you know, the funds that are quite substantial. That's one. The other thing that they really want, obviously, is some form of yield, because high net worth individuals really generally are yield investors. And so that's them. We've also, and in terms of interest, we've got a lot of interest. And specifically in Singapore, we recently had an in-person event. We had about 70 clients sign up. And you know, these kind of events, typically they are dropouts, right? Because they've gone for so many, they're well banked with so many private banks. In this one, every single one of them turned up except two.
Wow.
And they didn't turn up because they had COVID. They just tested positive the night before. So they were practicing social responsibility. And I think it really goes to show at the end of the day that whether they want to actually do it or not, I think it's something which is, you know, they're definitely exploring. Maybe it's because they're driven by their kids, you know, their kids. I'll give you a story. I was speaking to our partner in Thailand. We have a partner in Thailand, and he, and you know, in Thailand they're pretty big in this whole crypto thing, right? And you know, we hold sort of like this kind of round tables thingy, or you know, presentations, and you know, in order to engage not just the matriarchs and patriarchs of the family businesses, but their children. Right, so it's between teenagers all the way to, I don't know, early 30s. And one of them, well, I was just talking to one of our partners there, and he was just saying that he is a super degen, as in like, if I'm an adolescent, right, he's like, I don't know, man, he's middle aged or something. I don't but he I mean he's about the same age as me, right? But he's seriously into this. And she was speaking to, you know, the kids. The kids were, as usual, on their phones, not very interested about macro, federal, and what the Fed's doing. And he was talking to them, and he knew that they were interested in digital assets. So he talked to them, and one of them just looked up from his phone. This is what he told me, and asked him, "What coins do you have?" Right up in his face. He was like, "Wow, that's direct." And he said, and fortunately, he was quite a degen, so he just said everything he was doing, and they'll. Suddenly, right, the whole table of them, they put down their phones. Oh, this uncle, right? This is quite interesting. And after that, one of them, right, one of them, in the drinks part of it, said that, you know, we don't talk to no coiners nowadays. I was like, ooh, that was just some crazy stuff going on. Obviously, this was before FTX. I think it was even before Terra. I'm not sure if the conversation would change then. But I think that the next generation is like, my son asked me about Bitcoin. He's 9 years old, you know. So yeah, something's going on in that generation.
So there's always been a lot of excitement around the crypto native currencies, but what about from, from Julius Baer's or your client's perspective, things like structured products, tokenization of private assets, luxury assets, NFTs, how are you looking at, how are they and you looking at that space?
private tokenization and NFTs a little bit further out for us. It's a little further down the roadmap. That's something which is interesting, but we will consider it, the next step because it's definitely significantly more speculative than what we are dealing with, in terms of pure coins and tokens, I think. But other than that, in terms of like portfolio diversification, if I can talk about that,
Of course.
we did a little bit of a study, and essentially, if you took a portfolio of 50 bonds, 50% stocks versus 50% bonds, I mean, bonds and stocks, but you take 0.5% away from stocks and bonds, then I
Then I
think
think.
from the back-tested way in which we have done our study, the one with 1% Bitcoin would had an annualized performance of about 10-ish percent, while the regular one, which is 50 stocks, 50 bonds, was about 8-ish percent. So 2 percentage points outperformance every single year. Obviously, with where Bitcoin is today, if we redid the study, possibly that portfolio could be down. But the interesting part is that if we went beyond 1.5%, beyond 1.5% of inclusion, the risk reward compared to the volatility isn't exactly very attractive anymore. That means the portfolio becomes super volatile and not really something which we advocate.
I mean, that portfolio allocation has been a lot tougher. I mean, the traditional, let's say you described a 50-50. I mean, the fixed income legs become fixed loss this last year at least, basically, right? But and now you've got Ethereum yielding potentially 10% or higher, depending on how you structure it. The returns are increasingly on the crypto side, which is
True.
a very big significant thing.
You can look at it the other way though. Like what's that? MakerDAO. MakerDAO has said that, I don't want to put my stuff in Aave because it's yielding me 0.5. I'm going to put it in US Treasuries, which is amazing. So amazing, right? Yeah. So I think this is exactly where we talked about the wants of crypto versus the utility of crypto. The want of crypto is, you know what? I just want the returns. I really don't really care about anything else, kind of thing. Yeah.
One other quick question, because I was looking through some of your past podcasts. You had one on DeFi, which was
Yeah.
the Decentralized Finance 100 Times and Beyond podcast. And you talked about this obviously, closer to the end of last year. And I think talking about the growth of DeFi having gone from the start of 2020 of 653 million to, a quarter trillion by the end of 2021, which was a 375-fold increase in 2 years. How is your view how banks and DeFi will interact? Is this going to replace banks? Is there still a role for banks and DeFi?
I hope so. I mean, I seriously hope so. Yeah, no, I think there's definitely a place for banks. I've said it just now, right? I think that at the end of the day, the guardrails are there for regulated entities. Like many of the clients, like a paraphrase, 300,000 in MetaMask, but if it hits 3 million, 30 million, 5 million, they're like, you know what? I'm just going to off-ramp, right? Basically. And I think that for us at Julius Baer, we would I think that we recognize that yield is very important to private banking clients. And like you rightly put, right, Ethereum at 10% today. And I'm pretty sure us sort of like just safe custodizing their assets is not going to work. We don't have a very good value proposition. We need to be able to get yield on that. It's just that they off-ramp from MetaMask to possibly Julius Baer, and we do it for them. And also to paraphrase, essentially, if they got 9% on their MetaMask, they are fine with getting 6.5 or 6, if they're with us. But as long as, they can basically pick up the phone and call someone and says, hey, what's going on, kind of thing. Yeah.
It seems very much the case that as more and more of your assets, more and more of your aggregate assets move on chain, you're going to want somebody to call if things go wrong, basically, right? It's so too much trust.
Ghostbusters.
You might, who are you going to call? There we go. Well, Kelly, it's been, I think we're just at time. So it's been great having you. And we'll definitely be following your work very closely. And thanks very much for your time today.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Okay. To everybody else, thanks for joining. And we hope you enjoy this episode. And until next time, don't forget, we'll upload the recording and script of today's Mataco Tops on mataco.com/talks. And it's obviously available on all your favorite podcast channels. Thanks very much for joining. Thanks, Kelly.